It's you like, have seen us before, or you're in
person? I have seen you. I've seen you at South by Southwest over the past 10 years. So
we've been there twice.
Yeah, you've been there twice. The last time was Parallel. 2 years ago was the last time I saw you, and I dragged all these innocent people to see you, and some of them actually liked you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, there were only a few though. The other people that I dragged just felt dragged.
That's fine.
But you know, it's the way it goes.
You know, you could be dragged to see something great, and you still feel
feel ripped off. Yeah. Yes, I understand.
No matter how great it is.
Okay, we're rolling now, but we can still be obnoxious.
Do you know who's here? Who? I'm Chris, and he's Jay.
Well, does that help? Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Chris Mer.
Murphy, and this is Jay, and we are from the band Sloan.
You've got that part, you see. This is how I know I've got an experienced two-decade-old band.
Hey-o.
How I know that is because half of the younger bands go, I'm Joe and I'm Bob, and then I say, and are you in a band?
Right.
But being that you are as incredibly experienced as you are, and we're
media
sitting
savvy.
Here on the palatial, media savvy, we're sitting on the palatial bus. With this band in particular, nobody needs history. It's a waste of time to sit there and say, well, you know, I'll get into a few little things along the way, but I'm more interested in revisionist history. It's just a lot more fun. Revisionist history is a lot more interesting.
What do you mean? Do you mean like rewriting?
Well, so there's two things you can do here. One is you can
like
tell me if you can
the
tell me right
all over the,
exactly.
Radio.
So maybe there's a few things that you want to tell me that you've never been asked that you want to tell me, or you can completely lie and tell me some things about the band that people never knew and never should because it's not true.
Perhaps you didn't know that we're not making records for people in the present. We're making music for rock historians in the future. Just
rock historians in the future.
Yeah.
So now wait a minute, if they're rock historians in the future, what eras are they going to cover?
Eras of my own band or of rock music? Well, it's like when you look back and the Velvet Underground seemed to be in rock history, but really, or the Modern Lovers, they weren't selling any records, but you know, you would talk about the Modern Lovers before you would talk about Grand Funk Railroad. It's revisionist history. Like they had nothing to do with what was going on, but they are way more interesting.
I went to grad school in Boston and spent enough time with Mr. Richmond that he, if you made that statement to him, he'd probably look at you and say that makes perfect sense.
Well,
it's also like we were talking about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the other day. How it's Kiss aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but Rush. But I'm trying to think of something so minimal, like Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
Which, I mean, they deserve to be, but if you really compared, like, how many people in...
Gold
records.
Well, we could also get into the Grammys on that note, too. I mean, there's all sorts of measurement, and the measurement for me of what makes a good record is my two ears. You know, like everybody else, I get 75... Well, not everybody else, but I get 75 CDs a week. You know, and I say, okay, and you know, and you read, and I have a bad habit. I read the one sheets on the air. I have a really bad habit of reading the hype on the air and saying, well, they're supposed to sound like The Clash meets, you know, so-and-so. Let's see if that happens. And, you know, which will get you out of all the Beatles references in this interview. It'll get you completely out of those. Here's what we do not do in this interview. We have something we do at the end that'll solve the problem. We don't talk about influences. It's a waste of time.
The thing is, I'm not exactly familiar with your show. I apologize. But, like, obviously you are a bit of a music historian. So sometimes when I'm talking to people, I wonder who I'm speaking to and how specific to get. Now, with you, I could obviously get quite specific. But to your listeners, I'm not sure. You know, you don't want to leave people...
My listeners are a bunch of geeks.
No. You don't want to leave people in the dust. You know what I mean?
Like, but I do. Actually, I think leaving people in the dust is good.
So don't talk lowest common denominator. Get very specific.
Okay, so I stopped counting. How many labels in 20 years?
Have we been with?
Yeah, there's Geffen, there's Monster. How many labels in all?
Well, if you count Murder Records, our own little imprint, our first thing came out on that. We were on in the States, we were on Geffen. Then we were on The Enclave, the short-lived EMI sort of subsidiary that was run by Tom Zutaut, formerly of Geffen fame. I could get more specific about that, but do you want me to just keep listing down?
Yeah,
then I guess we were just on Murder Records.
In the States?
In the States.
Kind of. It was almost like, I think it was Koch, actually, which was a label here.
But that was later.
I don't think it was. I think it wasn't Koch.
We just on Murder Records, and we were distributed through, like...
You mean for, like, Navy,
for, like,
Blues?
Navy Blues?
This is why I brought this up. You see, I knew this was going to lead to an interesting... Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, where am I now?
Well, we were kind of label-less a little bit in the United States using distributors.
Right.
And then...
Maybe we weren't Koch until, like, Action Packed.
Maybe you're right.
Before that, we were on
We do
RCA.
Have Mike Nelson here.
We were on RCA for one.
That's right. We were on RCA for Pretty Together.
Right.
And, I guess the other one was Proper Distribution. Like Murder Records through Proper Distribution in the States. That's Navy Blues and Between the Bridges. Yeah, exactly.
This is Canadian. This has got to be Canadian because we didn't do
that
whole card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
But in Canada, it's predominantly been Murder Records through different major labels, like MCA for the longest time. And then we switched over to RCA. Yeah.
And then we went to BMG, and then that was eaten by Sony. And then we've been sort of one foot in the majors right up until this record, and I guess with the sort of stuff that we did digitally in the past couple of years.
And the only reason I bring all of this up is because from whence you started,
yes,
certainly from whence we all started, you know, it's that they are brave new world, and in the end, nobody, you know, in the old days someone would say, oh, well, they're on Geffen, they're going to be the new... You know, as everybody brings up every time they interview you, ooh, well, every story starts out the same way. They were marketed as the new Nirvana. And every time I think about that, I think, well, there was the big mistake in the first place, is to market any band as the new anything is dumb in the first place. But to market you as the new Nirvana, as I go back and I listen, I must be missing... Am I missing the reference there? Is there something about that story that's just not quite right? Musically, I mean,
you mean about us being the new Nirvana?
Yeah,
I agree with you that the new anything isn't going to work in any kind of brand or business. If you have to sort of find something new, you don't want to be the new anything because that means you're nothing. But in Canada, I would say in Canada, to a certain extent, we were the new Nirvana in that we were oftentimes in Canada that you get the Canadian version of an American story or an international story. So we were the band that wasn't from either major center. And we were from the Maritimes, and we were coming out in the wake of Nirvana. We were the same age. We had probably been influenced by the same mix of the Beatles and American hardcore and maybe some British stuff. And so we were as much like Nirvana as anyone, a little less nihilistic and maybe a little bit more well-adjusted
maybe,
or something.
Yeah, and more harmonies or
but
something.
Dave
more
Grohl,
well-adjusted.
Like, was the same guy.
Yeah,
this,
yeah.
The
only I mean, I don't think our Canadian distributor, MCA at the time, who were... distributing Geffen at the time, I don't think they were really marketing us as the new Nirvana. I think it was more of a press thing in order to put our band in perspective to a broader audience, you know what I mean? I don't think they were like, well, they're kind of like My Bloody Valentine mixed with a bit of Teenage Fan Club and some Beatles, you know. I think,
yeah,
they just were like, they're Canada's Nirvana. That I think it was more of a press thing than a label thing, to be honest.
Yeah, and I
again,
guess
it's about, yeah,
how specific do you want to get for who? To whom are you speaking? Like, are you speaking to my dad, who might know who Nirvana was from the news, or, you know what I mean? Like, or Teenage,
yeah,
Fan Club? My dad wouldn't know, although he might.
No, it's true, because Canadian bands, at least from my reference, tend to go either over here on the very pop side, or, you know, or the progressive side, like the Rushes of the world, you know, or they're loud. You know, like Mahogany Rush, which was, you know, right?
They were Canadian too?
Yeah, they were Canadian.
They were?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, they were. Yeah, yeah, so, you know. So, and then smack dab in the middle, there's a band like the Guess Who that when I play them, people still go, oh my God, I love that band. You know, and they haven't put out anything since, you know, what, 1970, whatever.
The drummer owns the name. And Bachman and Burton, I think, tour together occasionally.
Right, and the Sun had a hit, like, 7 or 8 or 10, 12 years ago, Tal Bachman
yeah,
had that huge record. But my point is that, yeah, as a Canadian band, I guess when it's in the U.S., they have to figure out, because it's kind of, it's not British and it's not from Sweden, it's kind of close. So it's how to make it sound exotic in some way, shape, or form, right?
Like Nirvana was such a big story, literally like less than a year before our record came out. Like Nirvana exploded in the fall of 1991, and our album came out in the fall of 92 in Canada, so it was like it was the closest story. And Nirvana was such a phenomenon that was the easiest comparison, basically.
What would everybody study at the Nova Scotia School of Art and Design?
I went there. Andrew was the real artist, and he was there. He did about 4 or 5 years there. I came in there after having done an English degree at Dalhousie. So I finished my English degree. Jay and Patrick finished their history degrees, and I think Andrew essentially finished his fine arts degree short of a couple of credits or something.
And you still went into rock and roll. What is wrong? But actually, I have an interesting theory, because as I was telling your tour manager, you know, my earliest still recorded available interview was literally the Talking Heads in 1977. Sire Records called my college radio station and said, "We need someone to interview this new band." And I said, "I'll do it." And I had no idea back then, but now I have the picture, and people look at the picture and they're like, "Oh my God, what a geek." But, you know, but there is something about a certain level of band and a certain level of band that lasts, that going to an art school or whatever, I mean, if you kind of look at it, a lot of even the British bands or whatever, you know, they went to those kind of schools. It's kind of weird, but there is some sort of weird synergy there that I've never been able to figure out.
Yeah, I don't know if there is. I think that...
But there are a lot of the bands that we admire that did have
sure,
that
like
kind
we talk
of background.
About Pete Townsend,
right?
And et cetera,
yeah,
and John Lennon, and yeah,
yeah,
everybody,
right,
they're
exactly.
All... Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
I don't know, is that more like a... like working or middle class thing to do in England, like, oh, I don't want to go to work, and I'm too, you know, I'll go to art school, yeah, and just hang around and play blues records.
See, but in Canada, it's like you go to I forget what the one is in Montreal, but exactly. I mean, there are places that are automatic that people who want to be artistic, but they're still getting a real education. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to go there and draw.
Right. Basically, yeah. But I never went to the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, so I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if it was for you sort of biding time, or more like
I was killing time. Jay and I were playing in bands since 87. Oh, I was playing, well, we were both playing before, but we were playing together as of 87 in a band, it doesn't matter, but I was just going to school because it was easier than joining the workforce. I was also working on weekends and hating it, but paying for school and being responsible. We're all kind of well-adjusted middle class kids.
So because we started this interview kind of wise ass, I'm gonna have to do this way, because this is...
Are you getting more wise ass or less?
In between. We'll see where it goes.
I was gonna say. I think the only reason you mentioned art school is so you could mention that you were hanging out with the Talking Heads.
That's exactly why. That's why I did it. But furthermore, every stinking article about this band. I've read this now since, oh, I don't know, I could go pretty deep in the records, starts out exactly the same way, and I pulled
you want me to say it?
Well, no, can I read you the one that I love?
Yeah, I think I could.
Oh, no, but I'll, can I read? Can,
with a backhand?
Well, yeah, I'll read you my favorite. They never matched up with the flavor of the moment. That was the one that I pulled today. I could have read a million of them. Isn't it good enough? I mean, all kidding aside, I'm not going to be a wise ass, because I'm kind of like,
you can, because I'm having fun.
I'm kind of like the stomping ground for this kind of thing, because I like to think that I've made a lot of bands. And when I say made a lot of bands, I'm the dedicated guy that if I like a band, I stick with them through all these records and I play them. And I do have 5 or 6 people that actually listen to me, and you know, maybe I've sold a couple of records.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, nobody sells records anymore, so it doesn't matter.
We'll get on with it with us.
Yeah, finally. We better get to it. But isn't it good enough to have a big stack of dedicated fans that there's someone coming tonight who actually is on my radio station who's young, and she heard me play the new record and she's like, "Oh my God, that's Sloan. I've followed them forever. Can you please get me into the show tonight?" And when I go on Facebook and I write, "Interviewing Sloan, going to see Sloan," suddenly the emails show up out of nowhere going, "Oh man." So
to those people, I say, tickets still available.
Yeah, well, I said that too. But my point being that why does every reviewer have to, I mean, you know, the Pitchfork gives this, and I have a thing about bloggers, which we won't go into for hours. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get an 8.2 on that thing, and they still feel the need in the review to do the opening paragraph saying, "It's a great record, however, they still haven't risen to the level they should have." How can, I mean, come on. Let's get angry here.
I think that's commercial. Well, oftentimes it's commercial. Sometimes it could be artistic, but I think that sometimes it's they're saying they should be. Sometimes it's like they should be bigger in the States. I don't know why they're not bigger in the States. And part of the answer is the reason that we're big at all in Canada is because of Canadian content regulations, which have helped
CanCon,
us get on.
I know
that's
very
right.
Well.
Anyway, so that's
a
ban,
but a lot of crappy bands have
no,
become
very right.
big in Canada.
That's,
thank God for CanCon.
That's exactly right.
You know?
But so there's all of that, and then I do think that. Even if you love us, I feel like even journalists that are supporters, there's always a tiny bit of, you know, the new Slowdown album, I love it, it's great, 10 out of 10, but there's nothing new from, you know,
well,
these guys aren't reinventing,
the wall,
they aren't reinventing the wheel or whatever. It's like, well, I mean.
And the band, most of the bands that we really love, again, without going into influences, yeah. They didn't reinvent the wheel every record. They took their sound and they either advanced it or messed with it or tried some different instruments. But if you are a band that's supposed to be an iconic band, you have a sound. Isn't that the whole point of being a band?
Right. Yes.
I mean, am I... so, anyway, I just had to get that out because it made me feel good to just... So,
do you want us to say anything, or do you just want to agree
yes.
with what you're saying?
No,
yes, you're right.
No, I want you to.
I'm just kidding. No, listen. We are, we're still at it. When you bring, like, there's a little just for the folks at home. There's a little pile of all our records. What seems to be all of our records here, and these are our babies, and we're very proud of them. And
you sell almost all of them at merch too.
Yeah,
so people can actually go back.
And we're making. I'm joking, of course, that we're making records for music journalists in the future, but we are secretly creating an enormous body of work, which can't be denied, and maybe we'll never make... If Rush can't get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm sure we won't be in there. But, you know, I just think that we're my own favorite band, and we're doing everything the way that I think a band should do it. So
then a lyric like, they kind of lost touch with what's in and who's who.
Yeah. That could be about me.
Could that be an implied
self-referential
notion of some sort there?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I see what you're getting at, and you're right. And so that song is from our new record. It's from the song "Your Daddy Will Do," and I'm speaking about myself. Yes.
So another thing that people love to talk about, but I don't think I can approach it that much differently. But again, how many bands do we really know that do have four composers? And that have to turn around and say, okay, we're making a record. And yes, you took all sorts of shite. You're allowed to say shite on the radio. You can't say that other word, but you can say shite here. You know, you took a little bit of shite for, you know, 30 songs and, you know, all of that.
I think that we benefited from that, too.
Yeah.
I think there was, we got some press out of the fact that it was so audacious, I guess.
But was it audacious or was it just that you said, you know what? There's room for a 50-second pop song, and if there's a great 50-second melody, then who's to really say that you? I mean, in the old days, I mean, Her Majesty at the end of Abbey Road ran how long, right? And they put it on there. Was that audacious? And they also left a minute of silence before that came on. Man, that's gosh, those Beatles were really just dumb.
How many songs were on that album? Were there 15?
No, I think there were more. I think that medley on the back end there.
Well, we had 30. We were kind of going for. We were trying to be kind of ridiculous by doing that many, but at the same time, we also, as we try to make join the canon of groups that have made so many records, you got to have a double record in there and a movie. As Jay points out, we haven't really done a movie.
you need the tome, you need the self. Yeah, you need that.
We've collected a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of. We have a coffee table book in the works. Not really, but I have a lot of stuff.
So one of the quotes that I read, which was kind of fun to read, is, and you referred to the real Rush band, in saying that one of the good things about them is that they're a band that can exist forever.
I said that?
Yes.
I may have said that. I don't know what I was talking about. But I always I always say that they're the punkest band from Canada. Because they did what they wanted, and they didn't listen to anyone, and
people didn't get them,
right? And their label was telling them to zig, and they zagged, and they win. So they didn't have to listen to what anyone said forever. And we don't have exactly that luxury. We run on the economics of what we're doing now. Of course, we'd love to have a big hit. It would really help to sort of throw some money at what we're doing, but but we're able to survive.
What in this age, I mean, and again, there's that split, because I had the interesting pleasure of producing a pop record. I got paid to produce a pop record. When I say a pop record, I mean a, you know, Adam Lambert level pop record. But I brought in real musicians, and it turned out that the labels were like, what do we do with this? You know, but I grew up on Top 40 radio, so I know that if I look at, well, we'll go down here, right? So in the old days, in the olden days,
yeah.
Right? In the olden days, mm-hmm. say the same year that the Raspberries had Go All the Way,
yeah.
That the answer was you would spin right next to that on Top 40 radio and would be a hit. But the definition of what is a hit these days...
We've joked before that we're not exactly making experimental music. At times we do, but for the most part, we're making underfunded commercial music that just is being made at the wrong time.
That's it. Wow. I'm going to pause for that.
Reflect.
I'm not. You know what? Then I think I have radio shows that are happening at the wrong time too, and it's an uphill battle to get people to understand that there's still good songwriting and still good production and all of that.
We like the production of whatever, whether it's Beyonce or whomever, and it's not our bag exactly, and that's not our strength. But
these are not low. Okay, so let's get down to it though. These are not low. There's nothing in here that is a lo-fi produced at home on the 4-track record. You mean you make records? So you know. Again, the old wannabes sort of thing doesn't really work, right? So, you know, back to what's a hit, right? Well, you know, today a hit could be an indie band with one guy strumming a guitar and a distorted vocal, and that can be theoretically a hit. But I don't know that it's really a hit, you know?
I think a lot of it doesn't have anything to do with the music. It has to do with the way it's presented, like the artist who's singing it, and also how much money is put behind it, basically. And then, I mean, maybe, yeah, you could take, like you said, The Answer Was You, or you could take even I've Gotta Know or something like that. And, I don't know, have Green Day sing I've Gotta Know, and it would probably sell, you know, a million copies or something like that. Or The Answer Was You, I don't know, get Shania Twain to sing it. Yeah. I bet you know, I think it'd be good enough.
Hey, we've got a licensing licensing opportunity. This is it. This is the big bucks. Hello, Pepsi. Listen, we'll give Shania the record and we'll take the bucks. We'll take the $50,000 down payment and you're ready to go. Well, yeah, I got an ad agency in this town for 15 years. I licensed a lot of music over the years. No, I know. I'm joking. You're only getting 50 because you're the unknown... not as successful as you could be band. So they're gonna get a bargain on you and your tune. Okay, so for me, I know what, it's really interesting is as I've been rolling through this album, and I think I've played probably 10 of the 12 tracks on the air, I've always been surprised at the ones that hit me that I wasn't expecting.
Okay.
But I'm just curious.
Are you gonna get specific?
Yeah, I'll get specific. The two for me were Beverly Terrace and Green Gardens Cold Montreal. The ones that surprised me.
Oh, okay.
That I said, wait a minute, this is, because one of the things is that, what did you, so you come off that, right?
Yeah.
And again,
that is parallel play that he's holding.
Yeah, and I played Who Taught Me to Live Like That,
yeah.
You know, who taught you, excuse me, I was being self-referential again. I was being self-referential. I probably played that 50 friggin' times because it was candy. It was so easy to play.
Yeah.
When you waited.
Who wrote all those?
I know. When you waited a little while to do this record, and you sat down and said, "Okay, we're making the next one," because you waited a little while and you come off, you know, the big epic. Did you think? About something on this, other than that you were going to be really clever with the name that they've written up way too many times? Hey, you know what the name's supposed to mean? Let's read that again, shall we?
I don't know how it looks from outside, but to me, any song could go on any album, and it's all just a hodgepodge.
Interesting, okay.
You know, maybe with the Beatles or whatever, you know, a certain song couldn't
be. I've never heard that said by you before or seen that written before. What he just said.
Yeah.
that it's not really like you turn around and go, okay, let's see, we just came off Parallel Play and it had this track and we are gonna purposely put more synthesizers and change the guitar from a Fender Strat to a Gibson Gipsy.
Okay, number one.
You've no never such played thing. The Gibson Gipsy? It's a great guitar.
Is that a real
thing? I do have one.
I don't think so, but it could be now.
It's a ukulele.
Yeah, it's a ukulele, exactly.
No, I think with a band like ourselves, with four songwriters, it would be hard to go into an album, I think, with a unified theme. So, therefore, it's funny, we've been asked that about this album. Like, what was the overall plan? What were you thinking about? 20 years, you're making a new album. What was the idea? It was like, well, there was no idea. It was like, what songs do you have? Here's the songs I have. What do you think I should work on? Da, 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 da. We just did, like as Chris said, the way we did the last few albums. And maybe it's just a luck of the draw sometimes. You know, you happen to have, someone has a hot streak and has a bunch of good songs and, you know, whatever. And Chris's other analogy, which I think is good, is we're kind of like a, may I use it? May I tell it? Is like a mutual fund that even like when somebody in our band is maybe his songs aren't as good, someone else has really good songs. So you're never going to lose out with a Sloan record.
A solid investment.
Yeah. And I've also heard it said recently that when you have kids, maybe it was Richard Dawkins or something, but he was saying it's less like mixing colors together. It's more like shuffling a deck. And to me, with these, it's just like a different shuffle of the deck is the only real difference, and maybe a different colored cover.
The one thing that has changed. Wow.
What color are we going with next time?
Yeah, I know. Sure. I think you need a light navy blue. Yeah, I know. You got to work on that, right?
You don't have a navy blue one.
You don't have a navy blue. You got to move on to navy blue. There you go. I'm so excited. We've named songs in these interviews. I'm feeling very important right now. The one thing that has changed is, though, that, and I noticed this at shows. I noticed it the other night at a show where a band had had a record out for a week and people know the lyrics. So the one thing that is different from this pile is that, yeah, radio play sort of kind of counts. It counts. Radio play actually still does sell things.
Yep.
But the internet and all of this newfangled loveliness is that people will show up here tonight. This record has been out for how many weeks here?
Yeah, kind of for about a month here.
About a month?
Not quite a month.
Not even quite a month. I mean, I've had it longer than that. But and people will be singing along. So how weird is that?
They downloaded it in February.
Well, yeah, but I do think it's interesting that the whole craft of this has completely changed. You know. Not sounding old school, but it is really fascinating to me that I'll walk into a room and sometimes the people in the room will know the record better than I will. You know, and I'm the one who introduced them to it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of...
Are you saying that people are buying it and devouring it?
I'm saying that people can have it immediately. They don't even have to go to their record store. They can just go, boom, and they've got it. And also, of course, and yes, some of them have managed to find ways to download it in February or whenever. For better or for worse.
That's fine. People singing along is great. There have been times when we've gone on tour right off the record coming out, I guess before the internet even, because we are a pre-internet band, and we have regretted it because we were like, we didn't give people enough time. But you're right that they can, that there's an immediacy. We can tour basically right away off after the
Which
record comes out.
Which is kind of cool when you think about it, because all the money is in merch and touring anyway.
That's right.
That's what's left in licensing.
And as you said, there are so many records come out, you basically you have a very small window to capitalize on people's interests and to have people writing about, and to have the idea of having everything firing at once, it basically lasts for about 7 days. That synergy.
So I just have to, there was another quote that was in one of the interviews that I really liked, which maybe we can solve this for all the reviewers, which was, we're not as big in Canada as people say we are. I saw that quote and I love that quote because, again, you know, the third thing that happens in every review is, well, you are, man. And, you know, and people come up to me and they're like, Sloan, oh, they're huge in Canada. Now, what I say to the UK bands when they tell me that they got a gold record is I say, well, a gold record, no offense. But a gold record in the UK is 300,000 copies.
But what is it here? Is it still five?
It's a half a million. Did they lower it? I don't think they were allowed to.
I think they lowered it.
Did they lower it finally?
Maybe so, yeah.
There's 50,000 in Canada.
Yeah. Right, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So the concept of, we have a number one record in Canada, you know, that's not where the money is,
We know that kind of success does not translate.
But boy, you're huge in Canada. You know that, though.
Well, we're not, but at one point we were bigger. We think, I'm not exactly sure, that we sell a similar amount in Canada and the States, and just by nature of the population, we're 10 times bigger there.
By nature of population.
Yeah.
That's like a per capita thing.
That's right. Pro rata or whatever.
Yeah, which is kind of bizarre. So you're talking to a guy, single dad, you know, there are now kids in the band, and yet you still do have to tour because that's where it's at. So,
but the other thing is, we played 25 shows last year, meaning we were home for
which is not a lot
for however many with the differences. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And so we're touring more now. I would personally, I don't speak for everyone. I prefer to work. I do have two young kids, and I just missed my younger kid's first birthday. But it doesn't really break my heart that much, like.
Well, you're a rock and roll dad. I mean,
well, I just
dropped my daughter off at her mom's. She's like, "Dad, you're going to Cafe du Nord to do an interview, aren't you? I love that place." And she's 10.
Right.
So there you go.
Well, I got to work, and my wife character knows I got to work, and the kids.
But okay. So my point that I kind of getting to is that the bands that do kind of persevere, and I know there've been times in your off times that you've done a little other work and done other things. But the bands that really persevere realize that this is a job. Mm-hmm. That being in a band is not, we'll get together and we'll play some songs and we'll tour and then we'll go back and become a waiter, right? Yeah. The bands that really persevere have made this their job, right?
I agree. I guess so. I mean, I do treat it like a job, but also it's the best.
It's a fun job.
But it's, yes, exactly. No, it's the
it's
best
really
job.
It's painful having him pick on me. You know, it's terrible. Me?
No, it's totally it is the best job, and it's what's that, sorry,
never mind.
It's an excellent job, and you couldn't ask for anything better, and I think you're right. I think you have to sort of realize it and treat it that way and not I don't know what to say anything more about
Jay,
it.
We've all had Joe jobs. Jay worked at the record store and I worked at the hospital, and we remember, and we don't want to do that anymore. I joke that we've been riding on vapor for 20 years, but like we were given an opportunity when we were in our early 20s that we have been smart about and lasted this long. I mean, in terms of like, I sometimes I don't think that I'm proud of anything. I just feel fortunate about everything. But, you know, I do feel proud that we made that opportunity last this long. It's pretty.
Well, a working band is a working band,
Interject. You don't have Action Packed here. What's your point?
You know, I left it at home. I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, I've blown the complaint.
Because in fan lore of ours, that's the one that's the most maligned.
Yeah, no, it's not a personal thing. It's called I grabbed them, and but you know, good try. So the thing that really kind of warmed my heart, and it, again, the bands that I like have a sense of humor. I actually do some stuff with a film festival for a whole pile of years, so I've done some film work. These anniversary videos are effing hilarious because they're played so completely, you know, except for Schwartzman, who had to do what he did. But there is something about guilt by association, and in a good way. So
I don't know what you mean.
Well, I'll explain. You're an easy interview. Murray Lightburn's not an easy interview. Oof. Okay?
He's funny, though.
No, he's funny.
But he's a contrarian.
But he's an interesting man.
He'll make it hard for
you. The last time he was in, he wasn't feeling well, and then he said, but I'll still do a song. And it was the most painful performance I've ever heard because the guy didn't feel well. But then I'm watching him talk about you, you know, in a sincere way, and I'm watching, you know, the guys from, you know, Broken Social, you know, whatever. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, maybe there's a whole another theory that people could start articles with instead of, they survived, which is that this is also a band that, because you've been around for 20 years, has inspired a lot of, you know, and not just Canadian bands, although, of course, you know, that's easy to do because Canadian bands are the underdog, unless you are a Broken Social Scene or the Deers, that have become indie darlings, and that's what's carried them through. Along with being good bands, obviously. They're both wonderful bands. But it was really fun to watch the video because it gave me a whole different perspective. And I wonder if it gives you a whole different perspective.
I certainly don't mind when people say that we've been influential, but it's not the kind of thing that I can say. It makes me look like a goof to talk.
I'm not sure they're saying influential. I think that the people in this video are saying that they like you, that they like the music, and isn't that more important than being influential in the long run?
Sorry. Sure. Yes. I don't mean now it looks like I'm trying to steer them as if they're being influenced by us.
No.
I think you're right for the most part. Like, I think that our humor comes through, and you know, we've hung out with these people. Murray Lightburn thinks that we're hilarious, and part of what I think is so funny about seeing him is that his whole act is being so serious and somber, and so the fun part is getting him to giggle, and he's such a good laugh. I was telling just when we were just in Montreal last, I had him laughing so hard that he was on the bus with us, and he started laughing sitting where you are, and then he ran out the door, opened the door, and rolled around on the ground laughing. And I was like, that guy is like such a professional like
Ed McMahon.
Just a professional sad man, like sort of.
His whole life is about angst.
But you know, I think it's relieving for him to sort of let it down around some peers and whatever friends.
Sure. Yeah, and I kind of saw, speaking of humor, all access passes, tour jackets. You're bringing it back, man. You're bringing it back the way it used to be.
Now, what does that mean?
Oh, well, everybody used to have, the all access passes and the shiny tour jackets. I mean, every band had those.
Yeah.
So how pompous of you.
We can't take credit for it. It's actually a good friend of ours, Kevin Hilliard, who has traveled with us before. We've known him for years. He used to do merch for us once as a fictitious DJ. And this time he's out on the road with us doing lights, actually. And he kind of thought, oh, it'd be great. He's a lover of sort of rock, not necessarily, I mean, rock history, but also all the trappings of iconography of rock and roll. So he wanted to make satin tour jackets for the crew, and he just went and did it, didn't even ask anybody, and just made these beautiful jackets that everybody in the crew has to wear. And because the artwork for your folks at home of our new record, The Double Cross, is purple and yellow, so they had to be purple satin jackets with yellow lettering, and they have to wear yellow shirts and yellow pants and yellow sneakers and everything. So he had a whole outfit, basically the Like It or Not outfit that all the crew had to wear. So it was more his deal.
But
isn't there
something to be said about this actually being fun?
Yes.
Like if you're gonna do this, you might want to enjoy. I mean, because the new indie cred is we're too important.
Yeah, we came up in the time like. As I say, we were different than Nirvana or perhaps the likes because we were less angst-ridden and more influenced by...
No major drug habits in this band. What's wrong with you?
Well, there's some heavy drinking going on.
But that's different.
But it's all goofball stuff. And even though I feel a little bit upstaged by the crew in their satin jackets and yellow pants... I'm all for it, and Kevin especially, and his joie de vivre, and the way that it rubs off on us, it's important. There he is, on a long tour where it can get boring and miss your family and all that stuff. It's awesome.
It's also one of the things I kind of like about, to be honest, Lady Gaga, who I think sort of puts that sense of humor love of what she does. I don't know. There was something else
though
that you said before too about, I forget what it was now.
They miss it though. People miss. What people like her are
The fun. She puts the fun back in being a pop star, like the way, I don't know, David Bowie did, or maybe even Madonna to a degree or something like that, being outrageous.
I think that's a fun thing. People miss it, though.
Yeah.
You know, because 80% of it, I mean, I'm not going to say who it is, but it was there was an artist who I interviewed probably 4 or 5 years ago, quote, folk singer to a certain extent, compared to Dylan in many ways. And then I saw him recently and he had a David Bowie level screen light show and he had a full band, and someone came up to me and said, don't you think he's lost it? He's lost his cred now because he's got a full band. And I said, no, he's got a budget now, and he's gotten relatively successful, and he probably wanted to do that sort of thing in the first place because he wanted to have a horn section, but it just wasn't within reality. Now,
are you talking about Beck by any chance?
No, I'm talking about Bright Eyes.
Bright Eyes. Okay, because I was that was the other thing
Beck
I thought about.
Would be another example.
I thought it was.
Oh my gosh!
Who was
right?
someone who came from a real indie?
Cool, because he gets the opportunity to do bigger things.
That's right.
Everybody still loves Beck.
But I think
he survived it.
He came from a corner, like he came from real indie cred background, and then got big. But then also, he didn't just sort of like, you know, make another record that was, you know, sort of underground or trying to be embarrassed by the or wasn't embarrassed by it. He actually took it to another level. And
but Beck always wrote pop songs, you know. I mean, from moment one, when you come.
I guess
right
you're right.
It,
yeah.
You know, and that's the difference is that people
like that
write songs.
He took the opportunity and sort of. And made an arena show, you know what I mean?
Right.
As opposed to he could have gone a different direction.
Well,
I think a lot of artists go in that direction.
Well, you go the U2 route too. People saying, "Oh my God, REM and U2." These are bands that have sold out, right?
I this is probably going to go nowhere, but I always paint Jay as an REM guy, and I'm a U2 guy from when we were in the early '80s. Like there were two types of people.
Yeah.
Anyway, that probably doesn't go anywhere, but...
But
you two have been playing the same night as us a couple times on this tour, maybe even tonight.
They're here tonight,
yeah. Are they
really?
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm sorry, I can't make their show. I've got to head over and
see Lenny Kravitz.
It's just... It ain't over till it's over. I've got to hear that song again. It's very important, because I don't hear that enough.
I like that one.
Oh, no, I like it, too.
What are we talking about? You two or Lenny?
I can't do the falsetto.
It ain't over.
No,
that's a great track. I mean,
You know,
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles could have done that song in 66 because it would have worked. It would have worked for them.
There's some. I don't know if you're seeing this live in the flesh. Some crew jackets.
Wow. Oh man.
This is the best detail though.
Wow.
World Tour 2011 to 2013.
Like, once again, he didn't ask us about that either.
This tour will be over in 6 weeks. But just might as well put 2013
it's never
on there.
Over.
That's right.
The tour is forever.
That's right.
So the last thing we do to avoid the influences question, and I hope you'll play because I've done this with a lot of bands.
You don't want to talk about the Beatles?
No.
Okay.
No, but you can solve it. If you want to get the Beatles in there, this will solve it. We've done this with several hundred bands, and they've gotten collected between bands because it actually is almost fun.
Okay.
And again, it avoids the influences question.
Part of a bigger mosaic?
Well, we've talked for about 40 minutes. By the time I cut out all of my stuff.
Come on.
And all the banter, nobody really wants. We do a full hour. Nobody really wants to hear us talk that long. Or I can do, you know, a part one and part two.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, I would too. Well, kind of like I could do the version of your, never mind, but of that album with too many songs on it. Yeah.
Excuse me?
But we do a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between. And then I go in, and it's not a playlist, and it's not an influences thing. It's called you're picking a bunch of songs for any reason that's in your brains. And then we sandwich them. Now, you can't have, in your case, you can have a club because you have so damn many songs.
A club sandwich?
Yeah, so we can put one of yours in the, you know, we could put a song on either end and one in the middle, preferably a short one so people aren't tortured. But, you know, in any case, and then.
Is it a California club? So is there avocado as well?
Well, people either go through this with the ingredients, which I sit here and pull my, what's left of my hair out. I will have the mayonnaise, I will have the bologna. Or in your case, I'll have the smoked meat, B. But I think that's a big waste of time. It's called pick three of your songs. And
of
then
our own band songs?
Of your own band songs. And then pick four or five songs a piece by other bands. And then I go in with no jingles. No, luckily, I don't have anybody who tells me what to play these days. So I just go in there with no interruptions whatsoever. And it's a solid 40 minutes of music, which if I were on the right places, it would be
real. It makes me feel like no one's listening.
It would be well, I have five people. I have five people. I know, it's really kind of, it's really, in, well, it's
hey,
funny.
We got a Tommy coming out our ass. We need to get into bed with someone.
It's funny you mention it because I'm literally negotiating with three stations on the interviews and they're saying, well, you know, we have PPM ratings and will people stick around for the full hour? And I'm like, people, if you play 40 minutes worth of music with no interruption, people will stick around. And yeah, they'll sit through 20, 25 minutes of somebody talking. It works. It does. Yes, I can prove the research to you, you know, as a marketing person, that my shows are well marketed and people actually do listen, even though they do not match any of the current formatics of commercial radio. terrible as that is. Although the oldies station in this, we now have a new oldies station in this town. And the second the program director put up oldies, he gave me a call and said, would you be willing to move your show? And I said, and what would the rules be? Well, you have to take 40% of our, I said, I know what the answer, word after that is playlist. The answer is, that's okay. My listeners will, if I operate out of the gas station with a megaphone, they'll follow and listen just for the hell of it. So, you know, for reasons I can't figure out. I am going to just, not no glory, just a blaze.
All right. So
I'm happy to be a part of it.
That's right. Three of your songs.
Well, and it's hard for us to pick our own songs because, like, we can't pick our own songs. We look like goofs.
No, you can.
Well, I'm not going to.
Of course you can.
Well, you can't.
Are you going to pick three of your own songs for him?
You mean songs that I wrote or of our band Sloan?
Three Sloan songs.
I can do that.
Of course you can.
He'll do it. I don't even know anything about music, so you should do this whole.
Oh, no. You've got a... nice try.
What should we... What, of our band, like, we don't have to pick our songs. We can pick other people's songs. Other... what would be
talking,
good?
I got a piece.
Okay. I'm going to play...
You're good.
I'm going to play a song of Chris's.
Aw, Jay, you're just saying that.
It's called... Raspberry.
Is the other person look a fool?
I was going to pick... Here's Chris's three worst songs he's ever written.
Yeah, right,
no, not at all. I'm going to play... Here's a song that does not get played very often. I think it's one of our best Sloan songs, but we don't play it live often. It's from the Pretty Together album. It's called I Love a Long Goodbye.
Okay.
It's one I want to hear.
All
right. Can I hear that one?
You can hear that one. You need two more.
Two more.
And then we need songs by other artists, which he will pick some.
Yeah. He'll
even
do it.
Even though he's just telling us.
I'll pick
I'm
one
a band.
From...
I know nothing about music.
I'm going to pick one from... I'm going to pick an Andrew song. Which Andrew song should I pick? What's a good one? Oh, yeah, let's listen to a song from Between the Bridges, our fifth album. It's the last song on the album. It's called Delivering Maybes by Andrew. Our drummer wrote that one.
Okay, and for your third song, are you going to hype something from the new album?
Oh, should I do that?
No, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying.
Well, that means I feel like I should pick a Patrick song, but...
Yeah, you better, yeah.
I'd like to play... Oh, yeah, we should be playing something from the new album.
Do you have to be thinking about other songs that I want to play?
Yes, you do. Oh my
God! Oh yeah, yes. Let's play another song off of. Let's play a song off the Double Cross, our brand new album. Let's play. Chris, which song would you play off our new album?
I don't. I'm not listening to you. Just pick one of your own. It's embarrassing.
No, I'll just play. Let's play. Your Daddy Will Do. That's another one of Chris's. We'll play that one.
All right. So
did
while
you pick
he's
other people's songs,
no,
already?
He didn't yet.
Yeah,
but he can go first while you're thinking, so that
I
way.
Got one. How many do we need to come up with? Do we
oh,
need
I
to
don't
actually
know, four or five
do
a piece?
Do you want to actually record us saying them, or can we just turn it off and you just compile?
Well, I'm going to record you saying them, but don't worry because I don't play this part on the air. This is only for me to know
remember.
To remember.
Can it be anything from any era?
Yes. Any. There are no rules.
There are no rules whatsoever. I just need to fill another 30 minutes. You can do anything you want. There are no rules. They've happened every which way, but they always turn out really great, just on principle, with no rules.
There are
300 of these.
Here's a song that we were on a commercial alternative station in Toronto, and we were allowed to do the same thing. Chris and I went in and did that thing with George Strombolopoulos that one time. And you and I, well, we went to it's CFNY or The Edge in Toronto. I'm not sure, but I was going to say the song that I chose. I think George Strombolopoulos said that song. That was the first and probably last time that's the song we played on 102.1 The Edge. And that was This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us by Sparks.
Great track. I play Sparks all the time. Great band.
I'm going to start with Love Is Like Oxygen by The Sweet.
Nice.
Oh, that's a good one. That's good.
Yeah, there you go.
It's too hard. It's too hard.
It's like an essay. You can write about anything. It's worse.
No. It'll be fine. Let me think. What
you
else?
Want, I'll give you parameters.
No.
You don't want them.
You want to throw your Gaga influence in there?
No, I don't even know any names of her songs. Except for
Telephone.
Paparazzi. I don't really want to hear Paparazzi. Let's hear... it's crazy. Another band who I really like, they're from France, they're called Phoenix, there's a song called Too Young, which is on their first album, which is a really great song. Is that cool?
If you went to YouTube and typed in Phoenix Interview San Francisco, you'd find the only 90-minute interview they've ever done.
Awesome.
and the reason you'd find it is because we got them in a studio and we were just supposed to do acoustic, and then we sat down and talked, and they're like, we don't want to leave. You're actually not asking us the same asshole, quote, the same asshole question is what Tomas said.
Do you think they've ever heard of Sloan, those guys?
I think they probably have.
I'm going to go, my next is going to be Lookout by Cheap Trick, which you can either play from I think it's a B-side. I think it's on, like, In Color or something. It's like an extra track. Or you can play it from Live at Budokan.
Yep, works either way. It's kind of ironic that their second biggest hit, their biggest hit was from Live at Budokan.
Why, You Don't Want Me?
Yeah. I mean, that was bigger than Surrender in terms of actually selling records. It was a live thing.
That was the thing. Well, we did a live record, too. It wasn't a big hit.
Well,
they're still available.
You see, you need to work on that.
Here's a song that I've always really loved. It's Coming Up by Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
Can we listen to that?
Yeah.
You can go again. I don't know any more music. I would pick a Kiss song, and then you'd be like, oh, shit.
No, wait. You already said it. What Kiss song do you want?
I would go with Two Timer from Dressed to Kill by Kiss.
Okay, there you go.
Solid.
That's so difficult.
You can't use that.
Yes, I'm using
it. Yes, you can. Them kids use it all the time these days. Your brain is in there.
Oh, can I hear...
That's what everybody does.
Jay wants to hear Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath.
Yeah. I do like Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. Sorry, this is taking so long.
No, it's okay. This is why I don't run this part. This is why I don't run this part on the air. I used to, and then I realized I was sitting there editing, and it was just like I was in Pro Tools, and I had these little blips for like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like my daughter will be going to college by the time I would finish editing one of those.
If you can find it, do I still get another one?
You can get a few more.
Bad Side of the Moon by April Wine, as written by Elton John, I believe.
Mm. I have everything April Wine's ever done. Isn't that scary? Because that's one of those bands we're talking about from Canada in the 70s. I have that on a 45, scarily enough.
Do you know that song?
Yes, of course. I own it.
It's
yes.
My life, it's a my
yeah,
life,
no, I'm a big April. Life. April Wine was, there's an example of a band, right?
I almost said it when you were going, but you kept hogging the mic.
Stop. That's a perfect example of a band.
Every time there's a band on the radio, and she's like, who is this? The answer is always April Wine. Because they get played on Canadian rock radio.
Well, because of CanCon, they got played. I mean, again, when I used to go up to Montreal every summer to visit my grandmother who was up there, April Wine was in heavy rotation every 5 minutes on both Progressive and Top 40 radio. And those songs would never have gone anywhere.
I met those guys in 1996, and I was led into the... I went to see them. Patrick and I went to see them, or 97. We're in the fucking Pointe Claire or something, some shitty suburb in Montreal. The loudest show I've ever seen. They were fucking insanely loud. It was gross. They played everything at basically half speed. But they were great. They were great. And then we wanted to meet them, and then we were taken back into this back sort of Italian restaurant thing with all this like little candles burning. And we were brought back to Miles' table. I could barely see him, like he was totally in the dark.
Oh no.
And like everybody else was like wearing shorts, like goofing around, and then Miles is back at this table, and then we were brought to him, and he puts his ring up, like kiss my ring kind of thing.
Oh, seriously.
And I was like, what? And I was like, ha ha ha. And he's just like, he just stood there the whole time, and so I had to sort of kind of kiss his ring.
I'm gonna have to go look up if anything of theirs ever hit top 40 here. Because I mean,
it did. A couple
got really close, but it was
no. They had big. They had hits in the States.
They had
but
a couple.
I don't even because we're from Canada. Yeah. I don't know which ones they were.
I have to look it up because I mean I own them just because I went to Canada and because I heard them on top 40 radio every summer over and over again.
You don't want any punk and stuff on your show, do you?
I want anything.
Are
That's
we
that? The whole
oh,
point of this.
Can we play a Prince song?
You can play anything. You have no idea where these have gone. That's the whole point of it. When you hear it, you'll be like, we picked that. That's
oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Am I supposed to just be picking my favorite songs of all time?
Oh, I liked it. Let's hear When You Were Mine by Prince.
Okay.
Can we play that one?
Yep.
Straight into...
Hold on.
Straight into...
Well, I'll say more than that, and then if you don't get to these ones, like, so my hardcore songs that I like are Gas Chamber by the Angry Simones, Nervous Breakdown by Black Flag, with Keith Morris singing. Although this that might be too punk, you know, like too much hardcore.
No such thing. I have no rules.
What else was I into?
You play six decades of rock and roll like I do, you wouldn't believe what gets next to each other. And you can make it work. It's kind of scary. Everything works.
Should I just start throwing stuff out?
Yeah, please.
Queen Bitch, David Bowie. Anything? Can you think of any songs by Dexys Midnight Runners you like to sing?
Yeah. Come on, Eileen. I love Come On, Eileen. Come on, Eileen. Oh, does he have a song that sounds just like Come On, Eileen?
That was
Alvin. Sam Robert.
Mike Nelson of Toronto.
That's kind of
What's this to say about the oeuvre of Sam
you know,
Roberts?
It's interesting. I'll say this off mic. I had him on the first
Was he recently here? Is that why?
Well, no. The first No, I had him on a bunch
He's
of years ago.
He's a dear friend
ago.
Of ours, okay. too. Right?
No, I had him on a bunch of years ago. And then the PR, the publicists have been all over me the past few months. There's this artist named Sam Roberts, and you've got to hear his new record. And I'm like, and what I always do when the publicists do that is I send them a link and I go, well, he was on in 2007.
Right.
You know, don't hype.
I know who
go,
it is.
Go back and look at the website before you hype me on something
right.
because you might be surprised that you're 22 and you've just been told to hype me on somebody I already know.
No, and he's got a young family and he's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a musician.
Yeah.
Do you want to play either I Got It Right or Shake a Peel or the other one, whatever else it's called? Shake a Peel, what's it also called?
What are you thinking of?
Tight Pants? One of those, like, Stooges ones?
Sure.
So
Absolutely.
Just one of those.
Yep. There you go.
It's an either or. I'm getting boring.
It all works. You know, I purchased the tickets because he's coming and playing, quote, with What's Left of the Stooges in September. It's actually listed as Iggy Pop and the Stooges.
How about political song from Michael Jackson to sing by the Minutemen, just because of Mike Watt there.
There you go.
There's an album that I've really gotten into over the past couple of years. It's Sacred Songs by Daryl Hall. It was like the solo album that he made in like 77.
Here we go.
And hopefully you have it. Anyhow, Something in 4/4 Time is such an awesome song from that.
I'm taking my daughter to see Hall & Oates on July 3rd at the Hollywood Bowl.
Hollywood Bowl, they're playing?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
They're what, sir?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. She's like, Daddy, who's Hall & Oates? I'm like, you'll like him, honey. She's
oh, that'll be fun. I would love to go see Hall & Oates currently.
They were
he
like,
can still sing.
They were
yeah.
the opposite of what I liked.
I wasn't like, that into
this. This is candy-ass shit. He's got a mustache. Fuck that shit. I like them now.
Yeah, me too. When Kiss Is On My List was out, like, I couldn't get into it. But then when Out of Touch came out, I was kind of like into Out of Touch, actually.
Band Kiss was on my list.
Okay, so do you want to leave it at that to go into the Sloan song, or do you want to whoop something in between, or do you not care?
What do you mean?
Well, because this next song is going to go into the Sloan song at the end of the sandwich.
Oh,
so
you do it, Jay.
This is the ketchup.
Have to get
is
into?
The mustard.
Whatever.
I think the Hall
it's at
Oates,
the top of the bottom.
The Hall & Oates song will go nicely into Jay's song.
I didn't pick one of my songs. So it'll go great into I Love a Long Goodbye.
Did you do Love a Long Goodbye?
Yeah. That's a good one.
All right.
Maybe Sob Story from Minor.
Do you have anything left there that you're dying to, or have we done it?
That's great. No.